Welcome to Real Talk with Oribi, where we tackle real problems with real people and discover real solutions. I'm your host, Menasha Dzikiti, the Communications and Community Management Officer at Oribi Incubator. And for those who don't know us, Oribi is a nonprofit impact entrepreneurship incubator dedicated to driving social change in South Africa. Today, I am joined by Arthur Mexico and Lucas Tsatsi. Arthur Mexico is a dedicated business leader with a profound commitment to empowering others and driving positive change. As the founder of Access Network Africa, he helps business owners bridge the gap between access and opportunity by facilitating social investments and consulting in enterprise development programs. While Lucas is a future-focused solution-oriented and impact-driven entrepreneur with the demonstrated history in taking initiative to innovate in his immediate environment. He is passionate about personal development and enabling the development of stronger and more sustainable social-economic landscapes for a better and more inclusive future for all. Thank you both for joining us today. We appreciate you taking the time to share your expertise. And just to give you a bit of a preview or context on the conversations we've been having, our focus this month has really been on social entrepreneurship, what it is, what it means to be a social entrepreneur, the impact it has, and why it's important, as opposed to the regular entrepreneurship route. And we also looked at what it takes to be a successful social entrepreneur. So today I want us to have a conversation around what it takes to build a scalable social enterprise and the different moving parts you need to consider when looking towards scaling a social enterprise. But before we get into that, I know that I gave a brief introduction of both of you, but I'd also like to give you the platform to tell us a bit more about yourselves and the work that you have been involved in. So I'll start with you, Arthur.
Okay. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. I think this is an amazing platform, and we need more platforms like this. My name is Arthur Mexico. I am from a beautiful town called Worcester, and I am a social entrepreneur. I am a broadcaster, and I'm a community leader as well. My passion for business, I would say, started at a very young age. So I remember when I was in high school, when I was in primary, right? I sold comic books, right? So at the time, I didn't really understand it as being business, you know? I had a crush on a girl and I wanted to impress the girl and the rest was history, you know? And we sold the comics and we made money, but I just remembered enjoying the process of coming up with a solution to a problem, because essentially that is what business is. And that is what social entrepreneurship is, right? And my passion for community development as well as social entrepreneurship was a perfect combination, because like a lot of young black men and women in South Africa, a lot of young black people, you know, have been affected, you know, by the legacy of, you know, apartheid and the inequality that we live in South Africa. I mean, South Africa is the most unequal country in the world. And seeing people that look like me struggling on a day to day, I just didn't fit well with me, you know. And even growing up, I remember just thinking to myself, like, how does it make sense that people like me are struggling every day? So I found social entrepreneurship. And I'll share more on this story as we go. But yeah, the rest was history.
Amazing. And Lucas?
Yeah, amazing, amazing. Absolutely a pleasure to be sitting here with the both of you. I could not agree more. This is such a great initiative that we're doing at Oribi. And yeah, it's really an absolute pleasure to be sharing the space and this session with you, Arthur. So I'm Lucas. As Monash has shared, I have a background in accounting and finance, some experience in investment management, but really where my passion sits is in enterprise and entrepreneurship development. I am an entrepreneur myself, but more recently I have considered myself an intrapreneur. Meaning that I am both, you know, innovating within ideation and building a business for my own personal capacity. But in the formal work that I do with Aribi, I consider myself engaging in the space as an entrepreneur, which means like I'm innovating and I'm putting into practice some of the entrepreneurial characters and traits that you would see in a typical ideal like entrepreneur. So by, I would say, profession, I would consider myself a strategist, a kind of somewhat of a generalist, because I have quite a number of different skills that I use in my day-to-day life. I'm passionate about education. That's where, you know, the entrepreneurship development and kind of, you know, my passion for developing entrepreneurs and assisting and supporting entrepreneurs' development and their journeys come from. I'm originally from Pretoria. I studied at the University of Pretoria, and yeah, that's where I got my accounting and finance degree. What brought me to Cape Town was I had a job with an investment manager, and yeah, that's another one of my passions. I'm also quite passionate about the investment space, which should be interesting in this conversation around scaling social enterprises, because we all need money, you know? it's part of developing businesses. So yeah, super excited to be here and having the conversation with the both of you.
Right. I think you both touched on a topic that I want to jump straight into. One, Arthur, you mentioned about how, you know, there's been a I want to say residual effect of apartheid, and you know how it has led to a lot of communities still struggling up until this day and having to, you know, find ways to make means to an end, right? And Lucas, you also mentioned how we all need money, you know. And I think right now we're in an economic situation that is very difficult. Inflation is high, everything is expensive, and a lot of us are now having to resort to having to explore multiple streams of income. And there's a select few of people that explore social entrepreneurship as a way to kind of tap into that multiple streams of into those multiple streams of income. So I would like to hear from both of you, you know, what are the key factors that aspiring social entrepreneurs should consider when identifying and defining their businesses? Because when the thought of starting a business is exciting, you know, you're like, let me start something, but you don't always take everything into consideration before starting. Lucas, I'll start with you. What are some key factors you should consider when identifying and defining your business?
Yeah, well, thank you for that question. And you're right, you know, we do get quite excited about the idea, and we know we want to just have this idea and we want to get started with it and like execute it. And yeah, for some entrepreneurs, they even just sit with the idea and they just sit at that ideation and being excited about the idea, not knowing where to start. So I would say some of the key factors really goes to the latter part of what I was sharing, getting started, which is the first thing. Because, you know, when you get started as an entrepreneur, you get to now test this idea and how relevant it is, which is going to bring me to the second part, the relevance of that idea. Now, the relevance of that idea speaks a lot to like, is there actually an opportunity for you to make something out of this idea? So looking at the market, so when you look at the market, you don't just go on Google and search, oh, is there you know, is there people in this field or what are the competitors? But you actually now start, what you have to do rather is to go to the customer or who you think should be your customer. Mm. So selling becomes a very important factor in terms of, you know, one of the first things or key things that you need to take into consideration when building your business is trying to get your first client. Like try to see, actually, is this something that I can sell? Is this something that I can do? But more so going into like being a social entrepreneur, more particularly, you have to explore whether, are you doing this just for money? Because like, you know, you spoke about how a lot of people go into business to have multiple streams of income, and whatever the case may be, you know, some people go in because it's a necessity. They don't have any other way of putting food on the table. Mm. But what really makes a social entrepreneur, well, at least in terms of how I define a social entrepreneur, is having the passion for community development, having the passion for making an impact in your immediate environment. And this could be by way of solving any socioeconomic issue, by way of like employing people from your township, employing people from your community, or by finding other businesses that could act as like your suppliers of whatever you're selling. Right. Like instead, like if you're running a restaurant, for example, you know, instead of buying your vegetables from Food Lovers, or and I don't mean to discriminate against these retailers as in any means, but basically I'm talking about like supporting the locals, supporting the people and the entrepreneurs within your own environment, right? Yeah. So going back to my example, sourcing your vegetables or sourcing some of your ingredients from your local emerging or small scale farmers or people that have food gardens in the back of the yard, you know, that's making an impact in your environment. So you have to consider, do you actually have a passion for developing your community in that regard, which is what would make you a social entrepreneur, because you're not just focused on making money, but you're also focused on like, you know, impacting your community and developing your community. So yeah, I would say some of the key factors is making sure that you're able to sell, which is validating your idea. And then if you really want to be an entrepreneur, I would say the second thing that's a key factor for me is exploring if you really do have the passion for, you know, the work that you're trying to do. What is the motivating factor of why you're trying to get into business?
Right.
So I'll leave it at that. I mean, there's other things to consider, like your vision, your mission, you know, the structure of your business.
Right.
But yeah, I think for me, those are the key aspects.
I want to circle back on validating your idea or validating your concept. And one thing that I forgot to mention also when I was reading your bio was that you're also currently the interim lead for our food systems program. What's some of the work that you are doing to help these entrepreneurs validate their ideas? Because I know when I first got into entrepreneurship, I had an idea, jumped straight into it. I got emotionally attached. You know, the idea didn't work at all, didn't have a market. But, you know, I was very attached and connected to this idea, and I didn't let go for like 5 years. So what is some work that you guys are doing in food systems to help prevent that emotional attachment, and also just teach these entrepreneurs that there is something called validating. See that it works, and if it doesn't, there's a different route. If it does,
Cool. Thank you so much for your question. So in the program, we actually focus on a number of various things. And validating the idea isn't something that I would say like we focus enough on. But you mentioned something that is very important, that, you know, you had an emotional attachment to your idea, right? Which kind of speaks to you as an individual. So your personal character, your personal character traits, you don't give up easily, right? You had this idea for 5 years. I don't know if you executed or did something about it, which is something we advocate for, you know, like going back to my point, try get a sale, like as quickly as you can, try get a sale, be in your customers' faces to find out, or your potential customers rather, be in their face to find out like, is this something that they would pay money for? Is this something that is a value add to their life? Can you actually sell this, right? So we advocate a lot for like entrepreneurs going out there and getting started. If we find you at a stage of development where you're still in ideation or you still just have an idea, the core focus in the engagements that we're going to have with you is getting you started.
Okay.
Obviously, there are a lot of other interventions that we do. We've got a lot of online e-learning content that focuses around three areas, really.
Right.
Business modeling being the one, capacity building being the other one. And when we say capacity building, we're not just speaking about like capacity building in terms of human resource or building a team. We speak about capacity building on an individual basis as well. So exploring, and that is also linked to the third element, which has to do with like the entrepreneur's personal development.
Right.
Because at the end of the day, we are all humans, and entrepreneurs, you know, being an entrepreneur is probably one of the toughest jobs that we have in the world, you know. I mean, entrepreneurs are expected to be very resilient, you know. You are expected to be a big risk taker, and that comes with a lot of challenges. And if you yourself are not well equipped or well capacitated to organize yourself and to kind of manage yourself in the best way possible, it can be quite a challenging journey.
Yeah.
So the third element that we focus on that is linked to capacity building is personal development. So we look at the entrepreneur as an individual, you know, their mindset, how do they show up in life, and we try to impart or make accessible some resources where they can focus on their personal development. And this speaks to like doing proper goal setting, looking at how do you prioritize your time, looking at your areas of strengths, your weaknesses, threats, opportunities. So doing a SWOT analysis, not just on like your business, but yourself as an individual. And then we invite experts, you know, like for example, in this program, we had the honor of actually working alongside a company called Integer Network. And basically, they came in as a life coaches, and we took entrepreneurs through a process of doing the Enneagram profiling, where they got the opportunity to take on a psychometric test that gave them a broader understanding of who they are as individuals, or at least an idea of what this concept and what this tool or what this ideology around Enneagrams has to say about them as individuals. What Enneagram number are they, and what does that mean? How are they showing up to the world? How are they behaving? And this was intended to bring about more self-awareness. Because like, you know, what you said earlier, you were emotionally attached to your idea. There is something that's very positive about that.
Right.
You know, there's something that is super, super positive in that you are resilient. You have the capability to actually hold something in your mind and try to execute it and never give up. That is a great entrepreneurial trait to have. You know, perseverance, very important. Mm-hmm. Very long-winded answer, but yeah, that's some of the interventions we have in the food systems program in validating people's ideas.
Nice. Beautiful work. And Arthur.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. My accent comes through as well.
No,
just messes things up.
Yeah.
But I would like to hear your opinion as well. Mm-hmm. You know, what are key factors aspiring social entrepreneurs, what key factors should they consider when identifying and defining their business?
Okay, thank you. So just to add to what Lucas has said, and I'll try not to repeat what he mentioned, I think the first thing that I'd like to highlight is exactly how embedded social entrepreneurship has always been within the African context. A big thing for me when I'm speaking to entrepreneurs, especially around social entrepreneurship, are the complexities that exist in the definitions and the processes of, you know, what makes one a social entrepreneurship.
Right.
And what I like to do is to take a step back to help entrepreneurs show that social entrepreneurship is something that we've all interacted on a day-to-day growing up without even knowing it.
Yeah.
Mm. Right. And I think one of my favorite examples would be the crowdsourcing technique, which is Stockfell, you know, which is something that has been invented by our great, 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 great grandmothers and grandfathers to help assist the community when it comes to financing, whether it's, you know, personal affairs or businesses, right? And I think if I were to go, you know, another step further and use something like Ubuntu, which, you know, some people are a bit bored of, you know, and we can discuss that on another episode. But in essence, Ubuntu speaks to the main purpose of going the social entrepreneurship route, right? And the definition, as we know, is, you know, being able to create a business that speaks to, you know, a cause, right? And you'd find when you speak with entrepreneurs that the cause is not the hardest thing for an entrepreneur to establish, right? It tends to be an issue that you've come across growing up or in varsity or at work, right? It tends to be a social issue that not only you face as an individual, but that people around you face, whether it's your neighbors or your family. So, you know, the trick or the art comes into merging that societal issue with that innovative, creative business idea, right? And operating in a way where, yes, you can make profit, you know? Yes, you can buy that shiny car that you want from the good fruits of your ethical and good business. But why not take care of a societal issue while doing that, right? So it's very important for entrepreneurs to define their own stories, you know, because the uniqueness in the solution that you'll come up with, in the problem that you're tackling, will come out of your own lived experiences. You know, I have one as well. You know, I think growing up in a small town, and I'm sure some of you would have that experience, the ills and the societal, the effects of societal issues are essentially around you, you know, alcoholism, unemployment, et cetera, and et cetera, you know. So I used those negative experience to create something beautiful out of it, right? And I think a big thing that I'd like to also stress is that social entrepreneurship is business, you know, and it's important to have sustainability at the core of your venture that you're going to start, right? Build a business that will last for more than the average of 5 years that has been predicted for most businesses in South Africa to last by. 70% of businesses actually fail within that five-year gap. So the big thing is sustainability and building that both in your business model, for business model, as well as your nonprofit initiative or solution that you have as part of your business, right? So I would like to highlight those two things as being very important when approaching social entrepreneurship. And another thing that I'd like to highlight is that we are sitting in a situation now where both in the academic space as well as the industry space, you know, that Lucas was also sharing more insight with us on, is that the concept of social entrepreneurship is still young, it's still new, right? So there's this window of opportunity for us as young Africans to take part in defining what social entrepreneurship means. As Sandile said, by the way, who has been here, good friend of mine, defining what social entrepreneurship means for African entrepreneurs. I'm excited to be here because I think, you know, in the conversations that we are having, we are also part of defining that, you know. So it's a very exciting space to be in. But we have to allow entrepreneurs to build their businesses based off their own personal experiences and backgrounds.
Amazing. And you touched on the topic of sustainability, building a sustainable business. How does one go about building a sustainable social enterprise? Because, you know, it's I mentioned this last week as well. It's one thing to start a business, but to keep the doors open is another story. Do you, either one of you, have any factors or key points in mind of, you know, what it takes to keep a social enterprise going, running?
Okay. Right? Okay. I think a lot of the issues that social entrepreneurship face are issues that are sort of out of their control. Because you'd find that a social entrepreneur would be the type of entrepreneur to have a beautiful food business idea. And instead of running off to go to more urban areas, they will serve the market within their community.
Right.
And, you know, the factors that are out of, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs' control are factors like, you know, crime and, you know, poverty. But I think the biggest thing for me is that, honestly, one should have sort of almost like a multiple or a split mindset. One being your business and your business model, building up your business through all phases from the inception, ideation, growth phase, to being able to scale up, right? And putting in the work that's required there. And then also having the other side, which is the social impact, right? And constantly defining that message, constantly advocating for that program that you are serving, right? Yeah. But In the tough economy that we're living in the very fast-paced business world that we're living in, it is very important for social entrepreneurs to be clued up and skilled up in terms of how to run a sustainable, successful business, right? It's important for entrepreneurs to get involved in impact projects like the projects that you guys offered, Uribe, incubators, and so on, in order for them to have the technical knowledge passed down to them in terms of how to run their business. Being in a very fast-grown tech environment, it's important for entrepreneurs to understand the tools that they need to use that will make it more better for them to run their businesses. The sad reality is that with the social entrepreneur, is that sort of that part between growth, which, you know, could be anything from 0 to 3 entrepreneurs or just founder run, and when you can scale now and you're going 3 and above, and you've got all your governance in place, you've got your strategies in place, you've got your support in place, is that it often takes a social entrepreneur an average time of like 1 year leading to growth phase to access multiple funding opportunities that exist for a social entrepreneur, right? So it is hard work, but you must have a dual approach in making sure that the business gets what is required for it to be successful, as well as your message that you're bringing forward to the community.
Amazing. And Lucas, I would like to hear from you, like, what is Food Systems doing to ensure that entrepreneurs are running sustainable social enterprises?
Cool. We are in the program trying to, so I mentioned a bit earlier one of the interventions that we have, which speaks to capacity building. And I'd really like to touch on the answer and some of the things that Arthur also shared around, like, you know, as an entrepreneur, to get to the growth stage, there are certain things that you focused on. And I love the one thing that Arthur mentioned, which is around governance, right? Governance, you know, is quite a technical, well, not quite a technical concept, but it can be misinterpreted or kind of misdefined based on how you're looking at governance. It's got the word government in, it's got the word governance already in your brain. It's like, yo, okay, are we talking about government or are we talking about something that is outside of the organization, or what is this word? So I'd like to just change the terminology of it and say business systems. And that doesn't just speak to, another thing that Arthur spoke about was, we're in a tech revolution right now. There's so much tech that's available in the world globally, you know, that can help entrepreneurs to delegate certain things and have, you know, support in terms of utilizing those things, where some of the tasks that they engage on a day-to-day basis might not be manual but rather automated.
Right.
Right. And so the capacity building element of things in the program, or in at least what we focus on within the program, has to do with developing business systems. Mm. Right. Because to achieve sustainability, right, sustainability can be defined as I'm all about definitions, and I love what Arthur.
I like what you're doing.
Yeah, I like what Arthur said about, you know, defining social entrepreneurship, and really, I think if you can define something for yourself, then it starts to mean something to you, especially when you hear it, and if we can get to a collective understanding of what we're talking about, understanding one definition, then we can all get on the same page and really speak the same thing. I mean, this is something that is obvious that I'm saying. Sorry for the tangent, but I needed to mention that. So I really liked how the focus was on defining social entrepreneurship. And really, when we look at, so going back to what I was saying, when we look at business systems and really using business systems for sustainability and what sustainability actually means, I personally believe that sustainability in social entrepreneurship means like having a business that can operate not just without you, but operate in a manner that makes an impact on as many different spheres as possible in terms of its, you know, its ambit of focus, right? So it being sustainable in terms of the impact that it's doing within the community, but also it being sustainable for what it actually is doing, like financial sustainability, right? And I hope I'm still with you guys here, but basically, that speaks to capacity building. Right. That speaks to having business systems in place that enable you to have your business run as a legal person on its own, as a structure that can run effectively on its own. So using things like technology, using you know, and maybe I shouldn't say using your community, but working together with your community. To achieve that sustainability. Because going back to like the example that I had around the lady or a man that runs a restaurant and sourcing their vegetables from food gardens around the community, right? So that, you know, that type of operation and its sustainability is already now dependent on another community member. So if you have a really solid relationship with that farmer or that food gardener, right, then you are one step closer to sustainability, because now you have a solid, you know, you've got a solid relationship even for them, you know, as the food garden person or the emerging farmer. They also need to have some level of sustainability and continuity in operation,
right?
Because when you talk about sustainability, you're really talking about continuous operation, and that being a real thing and not limited to just your business, but also, you know, outside of your business. Mm. So, yeah, the capacity building would be firstly opening up the mind of the entrepreneur to think in that way. So think in a manner of, I don't have to do everything myself, right? I can, you know, leverage my network, leverage my community, work together with my community to build capacity and build sustainability into my business. And then going into the business and actually putting in certain structures and ways of working to make that possible. So using technology for one, like I mentioned a bit earlier, and then using other organizations or working with other organizations rather to build even more capacity.
Yeah.
You know, employment more particularly or more specifically, youth employment is a big issue in South Africa. And as a result, there are organizations that run internship agencies. Mm-hmm. YES Program being one of them, Youth at Work being one of them. And they're always looking for organizations and businesses to partner with where they can place these interns. Some people might not be aware of that, right? They might not have access to that type of information. Mm-hmm. Our program or the work that we do at Aribi, we are geared to actually, you know, providing some access to that information as well. Mm-hmm. And what it means for us is partnership development and also community development becomes a core thing of what we do in the program mm-hmm. as well. So I would say we have quite a number of different interventions because, yeah, the ones that I mentioned, those three, are just internally on how we work with Entrepreneur, but also externally within the ecosystem. We mm-hmm. do a lot of partnerships and partnership brokering or finding organizations that we can bring into the program in order mm-hmm. for them to support the work that we do mm-hmm. and for us to be able to bring these partners to the visibility of the entrepreneurs mm-hmm. for whatever reason that the entrepreneurs might need the potential partnership or the organization for. So right. I hope I answered your question.
Yeah, bit long-winded absolutely. Again. And so say that now we have successfully identified and defined the social enterprise. We have figured out or found a business model that is true to our background and story and is relevant to our market. And we have a consistent customer base and, you know, from an operations perspective, things are going well. When is it okay to start thinking about scaling? And before we maybe answer that, maybe Arthur, you can define for us what does scaling mean mm-hmm. in a business context?
Okay. So in a simple format, scaling is basically when you have gotten to a point where you need to now grow as a business in order to meet more of your customers' needs right. or to meet their demands, their increased demands. It is at a point where you need to grow your capacity so that you can service clients, right?
Right.
And very importantly for an entrepreneur, it is, I feel like when it comes to scaling, you even know as an entrepreneur, it is when you have done the legwork, right? Mm. So yeah. you've done the work that was required from your ideation, your inception, going into your growth phase, and now you need to level up, right? So that's what I would say scaling is. And to share, like, you know, sizes usually, you know, before scaling, like I mentioned, it will, you know, be founder run, you know, which I feel like is almost every business, small business South Africa. And, you know, you might have 0 to 3 people working for you part-time or, you know, interns or whatever. Yeah. And now going to scaling, you're going to need the right people in your team mm. to be able to capacitate yourself. You're going to need the right processes that we spoke about. And you're going to need the right strategies, you know, in terms of approaching your market. So I would say with scaling, you know, think about it as like, I don't know, your business turning, your business is 21st, you know, you're in that phase now, you know, big boy pants, big girl yeah. pants, and we need to grow. So that's the scaling in a nutshell.
Nice. And when is it okay to start thinking about scaling as a social enterprise? At what point can you say, okay, now I'm ready to start growing this business?
I think for social entrepreneurs, it will be at the point where you physically and mentally feel like you can't do everything all by yourself. Mm-hmm. And that's often a good sign in a business. It means that you are busy. It means that you are meeting more needs of your clients, whether it's products or services.
Yeah.
And there is opportunity for growth, you know. And that is where, you know, social entrepreneurs would, you know, need to scale, right? When talking about scaling from a social entrepreneur point of interview. There are options that exist that can help entrepreneurs scale, especially when it comes to funding and financing their business, that are slightly different to traditional, you know, corporates or businesses. And I think, you know, just to mention a few, you know, we've got our traditional approaches, angel investors, venture capitalists. We also have debt. We've got the banks. And then we've got also now alternative financing, right? And to be honest, when it comes to, you know, South Africa context in terms of, you know, debt and the banks, a lot of it is still not tailored for startups in South Africa, and you'd imagine that it would be the same for a social enterprise as well. The criterias that exist, and in my own personal opinion, the risk appetite that we have in South Africa in general when it comes to investing in businesses, I think we're at a point now where we can loosen things up a bit. You know, most financial systems sort of look at the business, you know, from their results standpoint, and there's sort of no space to consider the potential of a business, you know, the future of the business, right? But we have seen the emergence of fintech companies that are offering alternative financing, right? So those are your short and, you know, unsecured finance, you know, that entrepreneurs can use to finance projects, entrepreneurs can use to finance purchase orders, and there's many ways to using that, right? But it's I would always like to say for entrepreneurs to have a very tough skin when it comes to the process of securing financing to scale, and to be very creative, right? Another alternative, which I think it's something I mentioned before, is crowdfunding, right? So I am excited about crowdfunding because I feel like in South Africa, there's still potential for us to use it better, right? So if you look at something like, you know, Stokvel Systems, you now see different Stokvel groups all around the country investing in property, investing in businesses, investing in products, you know, in each other's businesses. And I think what is intimidating for social enterprise when it comes to crowdfunding is the approach. You know, it almost feels like you're asking for something, but like, you know, what are you getting back? And I'd honestly like to just dismantle that approach, because and a social enterprise is important to a progression of any country, especially a community, right? What I'd advise entrepreneurs to do is when going out and crowdfunding, whether it's in your community, your families or wherever, right? Help the people understand the story. Help the people understand the vision. I've seen successful crowdfunding campaigns, and people genuinely do not mind investing in something that, you know, number one, they believe in, and that can impact the community. That's like a double whammy, right? So I'd really love for social entrepreneurs to explore crowdfunding, communicate your message the right way, explain what the vision is, explain what the unique idea of the business is, explain what the problem is that the business will be tackling, right? And try it in different shapes and forms. You know, I know there's digital, but go into the communities, you know, do a door to door, you know, explain to the old lady in the corner why is it that this would change the lives of people in your community. I've got a very good example of a good friend of mine who the first time he came to Cape Town from KZN, you know, like a 19-year-old, and he came here, you know, he didn't have a laptop and he needed to go to varsity and it required digital work. And he made the call to his grandmother. His grandmother then went to the church and, you know, asked for any donations or assistance. And I think by the second day, within 48 hours, there was enough money to purchase the laptop. You know, so amazing. so it's not about that. But what I'm trying to, the paint picture that I'm trying to paint is that if you believe in your idea and you can guarantee people that it will make an impact and will be sustainable, people will invest in the idea.
Absolutely. Yeah. And just to stay also on the topic of financing as well, I think you made a very valid point. You need money to scale. Lucas, I want to come to you and ask, you know, what are some primary funding options available for social entrepreneurs that you've noticed, and how can you determine the best fit for your business, and also what's Oribi doing in terms of funding for entrepreneurs?
Cool. Thank you for that question. And I'll do my best to also not try to repeat myself, because I believe Arthur has shared some of the really great examples.
Right.
And crowdfunding being one of my favorites. I absolutely love crowdfunding. And I'll share this a little bit more around, you know, what I like about crowdfunding particularly. But aside from some of the options, you know, actually angel investing, the ones that Arthur mentioned, we have quite a, let me start with saying this. While social entrepreneurship is a fairly young concept in the world, we actually, as a parallel to the understanding and the you know, the growth of social entrepreneurship as a pathway in entrepreneurship or generally in business and the way of thinking about business, we have this really bubbling industry that is popping up even in the investment management space. And this you know, this part of the investment management space is what now is called impact investing. And this is guys, you have no idea, like, this space is growing so immensely that, you know, there's now, in the global north more particularly, there's now frameworks that are being put into place around how, you know, your more traditional investors can invest or have an impact investment lens. Because impact investment, what it effectively does is it takes away the spotlight from focusing on investing in for-profit businesses, but you know, including businesses that are focused on impact, social impact, environmental impact, you know, governing their businesses in a more impactful way, right? And this is something that is really brilliant for the social entrepreneur, right, who are running, you know, their social enterprises, because this is now bringing a whole lot more opportunities for social enterprises to thrive. And what it does is it also brings a more structured definition and understanding of what social entrepreneurship is. Because in South Africa, and I'm not sure if this is an issue that is faced in other, you know, in other countries that are facing, you know, socioeconomic issues that are related to poverty, that are related to hunger, that are related to, you know, just generally, you know, due to the colonization and the historical backgrounds that we have as Africans, some of those social illnesses or issues. So what this space is doing is it's bringing a spotlight on how those spaces can be, you know, supported by investors. So the impact investment space is now, you know, bringing in other type of asset classes and other type of, you know, investment financing vehicles, such as venture philanthropy, you know, your blended financing models. And generally what these speak to is using the traditional approach of investing, where the investor would come in, like say maybe a venture capital firm would come in, and instead of investing for profit and investing to get a return on investment in terms of monetary returns out of the investment, they would now look towards getting a return on impact. So looking at impact that is achieved by virtue of placing money with whatever organization that is targeting at making that impact, be it environmental impact, right, social impact, like I shared a little bit earlier. So those are some of the other options that are becoming available to social enterprises generally in the space. To share a little bit more, there's, you know, philanthropy has been a space as well that hasn't been given a lot of attention, but now it's being given attention. Right. So venture capital firms have now coined the term venture philanthropy as well, which is, like I said, some of the other options. And what the asset class in its broader sense is now called a catalytic financing, right? Mm. So this includes also other options like grant funding, which is also a primary type of financial solution for social enterprises. Though in South Africa, I would caution a lot of entrepreneurs to say, do not target grant funding. Look, it's easy money, it's low-hanging fruit. We know you need it, but think broader. And what this will push you to do is to actually work on how you're innovatively, and I like what Arthur said about how, you know, you should innovatively think about how to get access to these different opportunities. Right. Even when you are going to investors, you know, think about how, you know, innovatively you can approach the storytelling, right? Goes back to selling, because you're effectively selling your business.
Right.
And I like also what Arthur said about how, you know, there are people that will invest in the story. They won't necessarily look like at the business and say, are you making money? Ask you for bank statements or financial statements. But if you, in the investment world, it's called the jockey, right? If you as the jockey of the business, you have a really resilient personality and you are, you know, passionate about what you're doing, and it shows that you believe in the story of what you can achieve with your business and you are invested in it, then there are people out there that will put money with you, whether you're already making money and you've got cash flow coming in or not. There are people that if you sell the story and you tell the story in a way that is innovatively and emotionally, you know, touching, and that you believe in, and there's money out there for you.
Mm.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, but to the point of grant funding, guys, look, grant funding is great, but if you shift your mindset around targeting grant funding programs or grant funding opportunities, it shifts your kind of work away from you know, doing the bare minimum to get funding. And this also speaks to sustainability. Grant funding isn't a lot of money. It will get you from A to B, but it won't get you to C to D to E. It definitely will not help you in achieving sustainability. What will help you in achieving sustainability is these other financing solutions. So like crowdfunding, for example, angel investment, venture philanthropy, you know, all these other catalytic financing. Like all these other financing solutions that won't just catalyze your growth, because the catalytic funding is the ones that like kind of help you from A to B.
Right.
Just to correct myself there. So yeah, those are some of the primary factors. And what we're doing at Oribi around this is we have a grant program ourselves that is available to the food system incubation cohort. So our entrepreneurs at the current moment, how it's built or structured, is our entrepreneurs would go through our incubation program, and at the end of the incubation program would go through kind of like a rigorous selection and evaluation process, and we would give grant funding of up to 100,000 to entrepreneurs that show promising, you know, that show promising progress and growth in terms of, you know, reaching financial sustainability, or most importantly, becoming bankable. So becoming investable, which is one of the core focuses of our grant program. It's really focused at being a catalytic financing solution that, you know, as I'm sharing, is a solution that can help the entrepreneurs to reach you know, or to get closer to being able to access other financing solutions. And through that, we try to also link entrepreneurs with those other financing organizations. So as part of like our partnership strategy in the program, we have different type of financing organizations that offer financing solutions to entrepreneurs. So because our ultimate goal is to be a very solid, tailored program that meets entrepreneurs where they are, this partnership kind of strategy is important to us because, you know, we have entrepreneurs that come in, and about 2-3 weeks back, actually, I was sitting with one of the entrepreneurs that has a really big purchase order from KZN in partnership with a butchery that's working with ShopRite, right? And she didn't have all the capital that she needed in order to execute on this purchase order. Now, we have a partner... that offers financing solutions for those type of, you know, needs, mm-hmm. where they do invoice discounting, they do purchase order financing, they also do asset-backed financing. And now, you know, we've connected them to this entrepreneur, and then the process of evaluating whether they can assist them. You see, so having those type of partners that are ready with Rome relationships is another intervention that we have in place. Because, like I said, currently our grant funding or our grant program only kicks off at the end of the program. Right. So that's some of the work that we're doing in food systems around, you know, just helping entrepreneurs with access to finance and all of that.
Right. And you said something earlier that I resonate with, which is that, you know, try and you know, aim for other types of funding, mm-hmm. because it helps and challenges you to also refine your story. Mm-hmm. And I want to hear from you, Arthur. You know, can you share some tips on how you can create a compelling pitch to attract investors, mm-hmm. in order for you to secure some funds to start or to give your business the push it needs to get to the next stage?
Okay. So when it comes to the pitching process, I love to see it as like you know, almost like an athlete, you know. Mm. You know, you never really get to that perfect pitch, but you get better every time, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a muscle that you have to practice. I think with the pitch, or the perfect pitch, it is important for it to be clear. It needs to be written in a way that almost anyone, whether they've got insights on business or not, can look at it and they can understand your business model. They can understand your vision and mission. Mm-hmm. They can understand your marketing approach. They can understand your sales strategy. Mm-hmm. And essentially, get a good picture of where the business is going, right? So for me, that is what, you know, the perfect pitch looks like. If it can give someone a screenshot of all those aspects of your business, and they understand it. And when it comes to also the narrative that your business, the social narrative that your business is tackling, it is also very important to include that in your pitch deck. I would also like to give, you know, the social entrepreneurs listening, you know, practical tools on, you know, how they can continuously work on their pitch decks by themselves. It's obviously very good to have, you know, incubate, to be part of incubators and accelerators that will help guide you through that step, so that you generally have an understanding of, you know, what your services are, your operations, your marketing, your finance, and all of those and all of those things that you need to understand in a pitch. But you know, technology is beautiful because now there's AI platforms like ChatGPT that can help entrepreneurs in defining you know, their services, in defining their operations, and, you know, all of that. There's tools that allow entrepreneurs to with the help of AI create the whole pitch deck, right? So it's now becoming a thing where it's not as much of a strenuous process as it used to be. But I'd say to entrepreneurs, you know, explore the pitch, you know, as per your own perspective. Use these AI tools to help you craft the message. But very important, take part in capacity building programs like the program you guys have here at Oribi. Take part in, you know, incubators, because what these platforms are going to help you do is not only define where the business is going, but it's going to help you implement systems in your business so that you can work towards that ideal place that you'd like to get to, right? Because with a pitch deck, it's almost like us putting our best foot forward, you know, which that's how it has to be, right? But you know, the process of having those systems in place in your business is a process that needs a community a lot of the times. Take part in incubators, take part in accelerator programs, take part in capacity building programs, and very importantly, build a tribe of like-minded entrepreneurs who are also in the same shoes that you are in, right? So that you always have, you know, alternatives, you know, for people that can help you work on your pitch deck.
Right, amazing. And it seems like this conversation of building a network and this Ubuntu and community is something that keeps coming up in our conversations during these podcast sessions. So I think that, you know, having had multiple people, you know, validate it means that this is something incredibly relevant. Last week, we lightly touched on this topic of scaling your business. And a guest speaker last week also pointed out that, you know, sometimes there are entrepreneurs that are happy, you know, staying within their regions and not expanding their ventures. And I think it's important to note that this is a valid point, and there's nothing wrong with not wanting to scale. And, you know, there are various reasons why entrepreneurs might feel that way. But we also talked about how scaling, you know, sometimes means taking a corporate approach, you know, and corporate is seen as very heartless, very cold and direct. And for social enterprises, I can see that being a little bit of a challenge, especially on the topic of scaling. You know, I could also be wrong, but I can imagine, you know, with social enterprises where you are doing business from the heart, out of passion and concern and wanting to make the world a better place, is it possible to scale a social enterprise and not lose sincerity and heart? Or should entrepreneurs rather look at it from the perspective of this is strictly business and impact happens to be a consequence of the work being done? I'll kick that question off to you first.
Okay, perfect. Very good question. I think that's why we're both smiling. But I think to sum it up, a very big thing that I'd like to attribute to towards social entrepreneurship is that the focus of sustainability in the first place, the focus of this bottom line that is centered around people, profit, planet, is one that, you know, has came into the lens because of social entrepreneurs, you know, because of people who are intra-social entrepreneurs even within organizations, right? And sustainability in business means setting up, like Lucas mentioned also, setting up your business in such a way that even if, and if you have stuff, you are not there for a day, for two, which we know is a lot for an entrepreneur, your business will run.
Right.
So I think when we focus on that, which is the core of social entrepreneurship, then it makes it more easier to approach these conversations of the types of approaches that you're going to need to scale, because it's hard, it's intense. It's not easy. It is true that it tends to shift now from that space of when it was just a pastime activity or a hobby, you know, something that you like doing, like in the weekends if you're working, social entrepreneurship, to now it being serious and you essentially having the responsibility for the life cycle of the business. But not only that also, but responsibility of people that are working in your business, you know, their families and their lives, right? And I like to not complicate it by saying that The question of, you know, having to go, you know, like full on corporate and, you know, having the social being a secondary to that, you know, we don't have to move that way, right? Mm. If we just focus on sustainability, especially for an entrepreneurship, like a social entrepreneur, I always stress that sustainability means not only you making a sustainable world around us by fixing issues, it means the business lasting for many years to come so that it can continue serving the needs of the people in the community. So, yeah, I know I said a lot, but maybe just that dire need for proving sustainability in your business, creating sustainability for business is enough for a social entrepreneur to have the guts, to have the grit, to have the attitude to be able to scale and continue scaling. Yeah, right. I think that. Yeah.
Amazing. And Lucas, yeah. I'd love to hear your opinion on this too.
Cool. Sustainability is very, very important. I couldn't agree more, you know, because in scaling your business, you need to sustain that scaling, you know, and if you aren't able to, and this will be like kind of my roundup point to how what I think about sustainability being also core to scaling is that if you don't manage your scaling and you don't scale in a right way, you run the risk of growing too fast.
Mm. Right.
And growing too fast can mean you no longer get any business because then your business reputation goes, you know, down the drain.
Right.
And as an entrepreneur, I can tell you that is one of the worst things that can happen to an entrepreneur is losing the people's belief and faith in you being able to deliver on your promises and being able to deliver on the products and services that you have promised in an effective way. I mean, you can go target another market, but that will give you a hard knock on sustainability. And
right.
It is important to put that into consideration at the core of your scaling. So in my opinion, having an entrepreneur that doesn't want to scale their business isn't a terrible thing. And I think as a social entrepreneur, you do not have to take the cold-hearted approach to running a business.
Right.
You really don't have to do that. And, you know, it speaks to the culture with which you build your business. Because I think corporates are the way that they are today, very cold-hearted, cutthroat and whatnot, because of the different cultures of that are found within the spaces, right? And that speaks to how the founder started the business and the type of people that they hired in the business. So I would like to look at it a little bit different to say, yes, you do have to adopt certain corporate principles, like, for example, having good business systems in place, having good business processes in place, because that is important for scaling.
Right.
You can't just call somebody from outside of your business and expect them to do right in your business and to perform the different tasks and responsibilities that you have in your business without a proper job description, without a proper induction process of getting them into the business. You can't just say, hey, I want you to do social media marketing, and then you give them a laptop and boom, you expect them to have everything figured out.
Right.
You know, there is a need for that. And not only is it a need for, you know, the process of making sure that individual is able to do things correctly, but in that whole process of getting a person in, as the example, you know, that I'm sharing right now, having proper systems and processes in place also speaks to how, you know, the person is going to receive being involved in this business, their experience of being involved in this business. And that is going to speak to the culture within which this business operates.
Wow.
Right. So culture is very important to scaling your business in a way that is still with a corporate lens, but without the cold-heartedness, right? Without the cutthroat, because, you know, it is important to be direct. Like when you're in business, you're there to sell a product. You're there to achieve objectives. You've got goals, you know, and your business has a lifeline, which is basically the money that is, you know, what keeps the business alive. The pulse of the business is the money that's coming in and out of the business. So that is very important for the business. It's non-negotiable.
Right.
And for you to achieve that, you can't go to a customer and be like, oh, we kind of need your money. You want the money.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So that corporate narrative of directness and straightforwardness is something that you can, you know, you can keep in corporatizing your business.
Mm-hmm.
But more importantly, the business systems and processes that are in place, you can take inspiration from a corporate structure,
mm-hmm.
you know, in scaling your business in that regard. And going to the point of entrepreneurs that, you know, don't want to grow their business, like you said, Monashe, it's actually okay, and I also personally believe it's really okay, you know, to have an owner account or founder-ran organization or business. It really is okay. Like, you know, you came in with your own vision and your own mission, and you feel like, you know, getting 10, 15, 20, 25 clients a month is okay for you. And that keeps you sustained, and it meets your sustenance needs.
Mm.
No one can say you haven't achieved your goals. You
right.
know, no one can point at you and be like, you're wrong for doing that. Because again, but scaling requires a certain type of mindset, and Arthur touched on it, right? Where, you know, you need to be this you need to have the grit. You need to have the tenacity, and that requires you to be a particular type of person,
right?
In our program, or generally, I think in the psychology space rather, it's called having a growth or a fixed mindset. As individuals, as humans generally, we have, you know, either fixed mindsets on certain things, or we have growth mindsets on how we lead our lives,
right?
And if you're a person, and mind you, neither one of them is wrong. Neither one of them is better than the other. It's just, you know, one fits a certain category and a certain category and leading a certain life, while the other also fits a certain criteria and leading another type of life.
Mm.
Now, when it comes to scaling and versus being a founder-led company, you need to establish for yourself where are you on that spectrum. Do you have a growth mindset for what you're doing? Are you doing what you're doing for survival purposes? Or are you, you know, do you have a growth mindset, and are you doing what you're doing for growth purposes?
Right.
And I can tell you that, you know, the narratives that we have in the social entrepreneurship space can be quite disheartening at sometimes, because, you know, there are some individuals, some organizations, some funders that come in with the mindset of you must just be about growth, and they never mind the entrepreneurs that are on the ground doing the very relevant work that isn't visible to millions of people or hundreds of thousands of people, but is impacting 10, 15, 20 people. You know, it's gone from you know, being or existing in a community where there's 50 people who are suffering and are in poverty or poverty stricken to being in a community with 35 people that are poverty stricken.
Right.
They've managed to help 15 people that, you know, that weren't breadwinners but now are breadwinners that can actually provide for their families.
Mm.
And that type of growth is notable and is remarkable, right? It might not be at huge scale in terms of what other funders look for, but it is growth.
Right.
You know, and I think it is important to also shed light on that, you know, when you as an individual have seen growth, don't be discouraged because and think that, oh, you know, you've hit a ceiling, because that's when your mindset becomes very important.
Mm-hmm.
Will you have the perseverance? Will you have the grit to now do things differently, to put proper systems and processes in place and actually grow and scale your business beyond what you've already achieved.
Right. And I want to ask a follow-up question regarding a point you mentioned about how, you know, sometimes investors aren't willing to not willing, but they have high expectations for people working on the ground in terms of numbers.
Yes.
Why is that? How can we change that narrative?
Yeah.
Why do they want, you know, these numbers instead of seeing the small impact?
Yeah, that's a really great question, Monashe. And I can tell you that it's because of the system we live in. We live in a capitalist system economically. And what capitalism means is make the most money out of the things that you're doing. Make as much profit out of the things that you're doing. Do not worry about any consequences, whether they're negative or otherwise, right? And by virtue of existing in such a system, there's narratives that are pushed around expectations,
right?
Because the investors, and this also goes back to something that Arthur mentioned a bit earlier around the risk capital or the capital that's available in South Africa and how some of that capital isn't willing to take some of the risks,
right?
Because these are some of the risks, like investing in a very small business or a small to medium business that isn't making tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of rands is a risk, right? And so these narratives of this is small scale, this isn't enough, the foundations of them come from that,
right?
And what we can do as individuals is to start to, I want to say, decolonize this capitalist system, because it is a colonial system, right? We can begin to decolonize it by using, and I didn't mention this earlier, but I love crowdfunding, because back in my varsity days, I actually coined it as social capital without understanding what social capital is. And yeah, crowdfunding speaks to stock fails, speaks to, you know, coming together as a community, you know, and using principles and concepts such as Ubuntu to actually achieve goals for ourselves, you know, taking agency to ourselves, which is something that is also very important in social entrepreneurship, is the ability to have agency for yourself and also to influence collective agency. But basically, to what I'm saying, and yeah, I've got so much to say around these topics, oh my God. Going to what I'm saying, right? The entrepreneur needs to the entrepreneur needs to be of the mindset of understanding that what they're doing is also very important, but also the funder needs to understand that what they're doing is equally as important,
right?
And we need more like crowdfunding mindset type of investors that not only think about their own pocket and how much money they can get out, but they think about what is the impact of that funding is going to do in the entrepreneur's life and the entrepreneur's mindset.
Right.
And that is some of the things that we're doing, right? As an incubator, is like we're using like our grant funding not only to look at whether, I mean, earlier I did mention that our focus is on getting the entrepreneurs bankable, getting them closer to financial sustainability. But underneath that, we also look at the individual. What has this funding meant to the individual on a very personal capacity? So are they motivated to wake up now? And because of that motivation, are they now making more sales? You know, because that is something that is oftentimes not seen. Like, you give a person 20,000 rand and you think, oh, this is like not really much money. But that 20,000 rand means so much to them that 20,000 gets flipped into 30,000, into 50,000, into 100,000.
Right.
You know, so as an incubator, we're in the background, and you guys are going to start to hear, if you follow us on social media pages and everything, you're going to start to hear some of these stories come up where we'll mention some of the participants in a grant program and what the funding is meant for them, the results, the outcomes, whatever the case is.
Right.
But yes, I think the problem is that people focus too much on profit. How much can I get out of this? And it's not, look, we're born in this capitalist system. This is not to go and discriminate and like point fingers and say that we're wrong for doing this, because unfortunately we do all have to make money to eat. At the core of it, we need money to eat, right? And yeah, so investors get to these businesses and they look at cash flows, they look at like, are you making a profit, are you making sales, and they don't invest in the small businesses because they don't see that. But as an entrepreneur, and this I'll close off with this remark, is that as an entrepreneur, going back to storytelling and going back to the points that we were talking about a bit earlier, it is important for you to find better ways and innovate around the way that you're telling your story, because there are investors out there that will invest in you as an individual and not in your business. And there are investors as well that will invest in your business, even though it's not a really big business, you know, even though it's just making the little sales that it's making. So keep knocking on the doors, like Arthur mentioned a bit earlier. Keep knocking on the doors. Do not give up. But also do the self-work of figuring out, do you want this financing? Do you want to scale your business? You know, are you comfortable with where you are? Where's your level of comfortability? And is that a ceiling to you? Or is it just a platform to stand on in order to shoot for the moon? You know, because that's going to be important to some degree. Because another thing, sorry, I mean, I've got so much to say. Another thing is, you know, a lot of entrepreneurs say they want funding, but there isn't enough emphasis or enough thinking, critically so, around what this funding is going to mean. Because somebody is not just going to give you funding. I mean, yeah, grant funding, you'll get it, and it's free. And, you know, there are little expectations in terms of you providing things like financial reports, you providing feedback, sitting in meetings to give feedback and setting objectives and targets and actually working hard to achieve those. Because this financing, investment financing, risk capital financing, or risk capital rather, it comes with responsibilities. You get into a marriage with somebody. Yeah, maybe not marriage. But
well, it seems like it is.
Exactly, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
you get into a really a partnership and a marriage with a person where there's expectations, because now, you know, you have put yourself out there and this person has backed you up. So do you actually, are you ready for that financing? You know, is a question that you need to consider when you are looking for funding. But it is important for scaling. I mean, there are other ways to scale, but conversation for another day.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. I love that you both put emphasis on crowdfunding. Yes. I think that, you know, we do really live in a very capitalistic world. And one thing that we stand for at RMB is social solidarity. And I think platforms like crowdfunding platforms are a way of, you know, communities coming together and saying, let us help to uplift this person and not have any red tape around that money that this person or entrepreneur is getting to run their business. And I also just want to touch on the importance of, you know, things like marketing when you are scaling. I think marketing is still viewed in the light of just one of those cute activities. You know, you put up a picture on Instagram and you hope for a customer or client. You know, not everyone, especially in small business, it's not entirely understood, you know, the importance of marketing, whether digitally or physically. Arthur, I would like for you to maybe explain to us, you know, what is the importance of marketing when you are considering scaling? Is it important?
Definitely is. Marketing is very important. It is, and I mean, by the time entrepreneurs get to scaling, well, I think you always develop the message. I don't want to say by then you would have had a very good idea of what message you're trying to communicate to your audience, and exactly how you're going to get your audience, right? It's it's very important, like I said, to understand your customers, to understand, you know, their behavior, their patterns, the platforms that they are on, you know, how they think, you know, how they, what they eat, if you could, you know. And in a country like South Africa, right, it's twofold, right? And this comes in understanding, you know. So in a country like South Africa, we've got about, I think, maybe 10% of the population that's really actively on social media. And then we've got, you know, the rest who, you know, they still rely on platforms like radio, for example, who, you know, still prefer materials like pamphlets, you know, or just word of mouth, right? So there's a lot of opportunities for social enterprises to use different techniques and cost-effective techniques to communicate with their audience. And now another advantage of social entrepreneurship is that I'm not only coming to you about you buying this pen, I'm coming to you with a story about you buying this pen and what purpose you are investing in by buying this, right? So for me, I always get excited when it comes to marketing, because when working with entrepreneurs, it's about discovering new and more effective platforms that, you know, entrepreneurs can interact with their customers. So marketing is very important, but even more important is understanding how to reach those customers and the alternative platforms that exist.
Absolutely. And Lucas, I'd love to hear from you in terms of scaling. Do you have any success stories from the food systems program of entrepreneurs who have benefited from the program and successfully scaled their businesses?
Yeah, totally. And I wanna just preface what I'm going to share with the fact that, you know, there's an entrepreneur that actually had the openness to share her success story. So you guys will get a short little video of that. If we can link it up in here as a way to share, because it's oftentimes much better to hear success stories from the horse's mouth than from us, you know, even though we are aware of the progress and the success. Hopefully you guys can hear that and see, you know, this very wonderful lady sharing her story,
right,
in terms of what the program has meant to her. But in a nutshell, I want to just start with the fact that, you know, scaling can mean different things in different sectors.
Right.
And if you're particularly from the tech sector, and you're hearing us talk about this, and then you hear the story and you question yourself what scaling is, then that must mean that your definition of scaling is not what we define as scaling. So just a bit of a disclaimer there, because I have a tech friend, and we talk about growth and we talk about scaling, and it's like, oh dog, that's not scaling. Anyway, so this lady, she joined us in the 2024 cohort as a goat breeder.
Wow.
So she actually had about I think 32 goats when she joined us. And in the last interaction that we had with her, we got an amazing update that she's now having over 60 goats in a farm.
Wow.
You know, this lady is very resilient. She's very strong. She's dedicated, ambitious, and with that, she's also started a food truck in the community that she operates, employing just over 3 people, and she's gone into crop production. But her success story, so that's some of the scaling and growing that she's taken part in, and that she's experienced throughout, you know, from the beginning of joining our program. But her success story is really from some of the importance of why it is for us to have partners, external organizations, and strongly participate within our network and our ecosystem, right, is that there was an opportunity that popped up by virtue of us having the networks that we do and, you know, brokering some of the partners that, or partnerships that we have with different organizations. But this this opportunity came about via a partner that we have in the space, and Founders Factory Africa was actually looking for entrepreneurs that they could have within their program that is going to be, or not going to be, but that is giving away 100,000 rand, wow, grant funding for for various reasons, some aligned to business operations, scaling, or testing out a different revenue model. And, you know, we were very honored and pleased to hear that she actually won that 100,000 rand.
Wow.
And she was so, she was like so grateful for being a part of this program, because she wouldn't otherwise have known about this if she wasn't in the program.
Yeah.
And I say it's a success story because, you know, when I sat in a conversation with her, she was like, she looked at the criteria and she immediately was like, yo, I don't qualify for this,
mm-hmm,
interestingly. But she went and knocked on the door nonetheless, because, right, we told her, yeah, listen, go for it. And she went for it. And by divine intervention, she now has the 100,000 rand, and she was able to purchase an asset for her business. Wow. In perfect timing with her starting the food truck business.
Amazing.
And yeah, it was really great. The lady's name goes by Kirimone Nyamagazi, who runs a business called Agri Premium. She's based all the way in Gauteng. And yeah, that's a success story. And that I can share at the moment.
Wow.
I mean, there's another lady that's based in Limpopo that's doing really amazing work. We've got a couple here based in Western Cape, Roots and Roll, that are also doing really amazing work, that have managed to kind of grow and scale their business and receive multiple different opportunities throughout the program.
Mm.
The list goes on. But like I said earlier, look, if you want to catch wind of all of them, follow us on our social media pages, sign up to our newsletter, and right, yeah, you'll get the juice.
Amazing. And Arthur, I will throw this question at you as a final question. What are some actionable tips that you would give to social entrepreneurs looking to build and scale their ventures?
Okay. I think I would also like to just stress the point that Lucas raised earlier, to say that as a social entrepreneur, it starts with self.
Mm.
You know, the beauty about being a human being is that no matter at what level you are with a specific skill or ability, we hone this great skill of, you know, learning new things constantly all the time. So, you know, as an entrepreneur, your potential is something that you can't see right now and you can't fathom. So take the chance for doing the internal work first. Do all the internal work that needs to be done. Get the right people around you who will help you leverage off your strengths and weaknesses, and guide you towards the mentality that you need to have as a social entrepreneur. I love the example that you took out about the criteria, right, with the entrepreneur that you worked with. And like I said before, when it comes to applying for programs, which is very important for exposure, when it comes to applying for funding, you know, it is a process that, I won't lie, even me till today, I'll be honest, it is very intimidating for any human being. And I think for an entrepreneur sitting at home, I'd really like to influence the thought process or the ideology of trying regardless, right? Because that is the very essence of being an entrepreneur.
Indeed.
You know, the fact that despite any odds that are in front of you, the least that you do is to try, right? It is very important for social entrepreneur, I think, in a career of a social entrepreneur to do what I call the legwork, right? Mm. And this happens before, you know, you scale. And the legwork is the work that is not always fun to do. It is a lot of time being part of a program. Mm. It's a lot of time being part of an incubator and having people there who are constantly, you know, like people like Lucas who are constantly pushing you to unlock the potential that's in you already. Those things are very important for social entrepreneur's career. Mm. In fact, I always make the example to say that picture you're scaling as you after whatever degree that you're doing and then you get that job that you, or that internship that you wanted to do. And but to get there, there's a lot of things that you had to do. You know, I mentioned earlier on, I think when you compare social entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs, you know, you often, like I said, you know, the average time is about a year long process between when you are ready to scale and when you actually scale. Mm-hmm. And that year can look like many things. It can look like doing two incubator programs. It can look mm-hmm. like doing a free course online. Mm-hmm. It can look like, you know, attending 1,000 networking events, right? Mm-hmm. But every day of that period until you can scale as an entrepreneur needs to be dedicated to exploring new contexts that might be able to expose you in life, approaching new customers, trying to operate or sell in new areas in your community as well. So it's not a one size fits all. The other end of it is beautiful, I promise you.
Yeah.
But the work in between is 1 year of constantly refining yourself and your business, until you can get to the point of scaling. And I think in closing, you know, and this applies to both entrepreneurs and entrepreneurs, right, is that by 2050, 1 in 4 people in the world will be from this continent, African, right? And we all know how many continents there are in the world. I can't get to it right now online. Someone give me a number. And Africa will also hold 65% of the world's remaining uncultivated land. Africa has extreme potential in renewable energy. We've got abundance of resources. Mm-hmm. And we've got a dynamic, energetic, and creative workforce, mm-hmm. right? So this is the window now for all creatives, for all social entrepreneurs to make use of it, right? And to learn, to really humble yourself towards the journey and be willing to learn, be willing to fail, right? But as long as you're failing forward,
mm-hmm. yeah.
which, trust me, it does not look as good as it sounds. You know? One can only take so much else. But that is basically, as Lucas said, the mindset that a social entrepreneur needs to have. Mm. And those are the small sacrifices as an entrepreneur in general that you should be willing to take in order to grow your business. Yeah.
Right. Amazing. Thank you both so much for your time today. You shared so much valuable insight, and I know personally I'm going to take a lot of it and apply it into my personal ventures. And before we close off, I would like you guys the chance to share any of your professional platforms that anyone who's listening you know, can reach out to you on. If they're interested, would you like to start?
Yes, thank you very much. Can we have an access banner go up the screen now? To get a hold of me, you can follow my company, Access Network Africa, on all platforms. That's LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. You can follow my personal profile as well. That's Arthur Mexico on social media pages. Come to the friendly people at Oribi if you want to get a hold of me. I'm sure they'll help you. Yeah.
100%.
Thanks.
Awesome. Yeah, professionally, I'm available on LinkedIn. Some of you might have trouble finding me, but my parents were very creative and decided, let's give them three names. So my first name is Albakwe. Mm. But you can also, you know, you can call me Lucas. On LinkedIn, you'll find me as Albakwe Tati. I'm not very active on LinkedIn. I do repost a lot. But yeah, please feel free to shoot a DM if you want to get in touch. And yeah, we can take things from there. I'm also an entrepreneur. I've got a business that, well, I've got two businesses. One is kind of dormant. It's a shelf company that I'm working on in the very, very back end. It's called Rated Capital. As you heard a little bit earlier, I'm passionate about investment management, but its core focus is around debunking the whole blended financing element and not using just collective agency and collective action to achieve that, but building models, very technical, building models around achieving impact and profit returns. And then my other business is Fast Fluency Africa. You can find information about it on LinkedIn if you go view my profile. There we focus on... It's an edtech company where we focus around preserving the indigenous knowledge systems of Africa from the lens of preserving African languages, cultures, stories, and philosophies. At the moment, we're focused on languages predominantly. And it's also kind of parked for the moment because we're doing a lot of back-end work, developing content in the different other languages that we'll be offering to market in the next 2 to 3 years. Cool. That's me.
Amazing. Thank you guys so much. And that's it for today's episode of Real Talk with Oribi. A huge thank you to our guests, Arthur and Lucas, for sharing their insights and experiences. We hope you found this conversation as inspiring and enlightening as we did. If you enjoyed today's episode, be sure to subscribe, leave a rating, and review on your favorite podcasting platform. Don't forget to follow us on Instagram at @Oribi_South Africa to stay updated on upcoming episodes and the latest news from Oribi.